Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast for Wednesday, November 9th, 2011. This would be, again, I don't know what podcast this is, and I failed to look it up ahead of time. So I'll look that up, and then I'll say it as we go along. With me today, we have a special treat. A person we're going to call Bill, and a lady we're going to call Sarah. So Bill and Sarah, welcome to BadQuaker.com podcast.
Hello.
Hi.
Bill and Sarah live in Dayton, Ohio, and they have a bit of experience with the as young people on their own trying to wrestle a living out of the system here in the Rust Belt and the fading in a city in its fading glory. Dayton, Ohio, I've said this on a few podcasts, Dayton, Ohio, well, it's called the Gem City, you know, and it was called that. Do you know the reason Dayton, no. Ohio is called the Gem City? Mm-hmm. Well, there's two reasons. First off, at the height of the Industrial Revolution, Dayton was like, it was like the Silicon Valley of its day. It was the high-tech end of the Industrial Revolution was taking place in the late 1800s.
NCR.
Yeah, and right around 1900, NCR was there, National Cash Register, and that was cutting-edge technology of its day. And then the burgeoning auto industry and the burgeoning aircraft industries in were both, even though Dayton is not like Detroit as far as auto, Dayton was a major source of auto parts.
Right.
Like
and bicycles.
And bicycles, most people don't realize, you know, you think nowadays about bicycles and you think, oh, they're fun for kids. But in 1900, bicycles were not a kid's toy. That was a very expensive high-tech thing that rich people bought, you know.
It was transportation.
Yeah. And there was, in the early 1900s, there was this really strong rivalry between the people who wanted cars and the people who wanted bicycles. And there was like a political struggle between them because the bicycle people wanted to have roads and outlaw cars on roads. And the car people wanted the roads built so that cars could drive on them. And so there was a real wrangling between.
Lot in those states.
Yeah, well, you know, little money starts shuffling around into government hands, and it's amazing how
it's a done deal.
Yeah. So you guys are struggling along in Dayton, Ohio, and you're actually in one of the old sections of Dayton, in like the Victorian neighborhoods and so forth. How old is your house?
It's from 1917.
1917. So it's like 90, some, boy, I don't know. I have to take my gloves off and start counting to figure that out.
It's 93 years old,
maybe?
Something like that.
92. 92, that's
yeah.
It.
Yeah. What kind of condition is the house in, is in general?
It's in good condition. Luckily, we were the third owners. We saw a lot of houses. We went house hunting for about a year. I mean, lots of houses. I mean, you could see houses down the street, and half the houses would be for sale.
Mm.
It's in good condition, so we have mahogany floors and
wow, mahogany floors.
Yeah, mahogany hardwood floors that we ripped the carpets out and we resurfaced, and we got them up to snuff again. And we have Latin mortar walls, not the drywall with mm-hmm. the 2x4s in it.
Nice big fireplace.
Nice big fireplace. The house was built, I think, before we had plumbing.
Mm. Yeah, there was no bathroom.
There was no bathroom.
So that was all retrofitted.
Yeah, it was retrofitted from a bedroom. So it used to be a 3-bedroom, no bathroom. Mm. Yeah, it's a 2.5 bedroom, I'd say. One bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But luckily we have a clawfoot tub that they put in there. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice tub.
Now, also you have, like, I know around the fireplace there's some really nice tile work.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of custom hand-done woodwork around the house.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking of, you know, like we talk about McMansions nowadays, and we think of these fabulous homes on tiny little plots of land. Yeah, yeah, they pretty much are.
Yeah.
How would you rate the general construction and the structure itself of that house, of your house, compared to the modern McMansions that we see being built?
Well, we see a bit of settling in the front. I remember seeing all of the, doing the inspection with the inspector, and there's some settling in the front. But other than that, structurally, the thing is sound. Mm-hmm. I mean, that old 100-year-old...
It survived the Great Flood.
It survived the Great Dayton Flood. The basement itself never has flooded, ever.
Mm.
All of the foundation is still in good order. None of it's cracked, mm-hmm. even though we got a couple of trees nearby. Electrical is a bit of an issue. We don't have grounded outlets on the second floor.
Yeah.
But we're lucky we've got electricity in the house because it was built before electricity, too.
Yeah, so that's all retrofitted,
That's all retrofitted, too. Yeah. Got a nice furnace from, I think, like 88, something like that.
80-something.
And it keeps the house warm.
If someone was to start from scratch and build a house like that nowadays,
mm-hmm.
Replicating the hand tooling and replicating all that stuff by hand from scratch, how do you think that would compare price-wise?
I know for a fact that with the insurance, at least, they've compared it at $370,000 to fully replace everything.
Yeah.
And we got it in this market for $26,500.
Now, I would imagine that, you know, adjusted for the economy and everything like that, that back in the day when it was built,
mm-hmm.
It was not cheap to build.
No, it was not a cheap house, I could tell. And the brasswork for the fireplace really speaks for that. The, mm-hmm. the fireplace has a lot of really nice tile work, and it's the only one that we saw that had some green tiles to it. Usually it's brown or orange. But the brasswork and the front of the fireplace is just beautiful. It's really just the cover, so you take it off and then you wouldn't see that once there's a fire there, but it's really nice in the meantime just sitting there.
German craftsmanship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Dayton area was a lot of German families moved into the area and took advantage of the blooming industrial revolution that was taking place.
Well, that's another thing is we know for a fact that the people that were in the house before us were German immigrants.
Straight
from Germany. They bought the house right from Germany and they raised their family there.
Wow.
Yeah. And we found some books upstairs
there's
in the attic.
Books, there's posters.
There's posters downstairs in the basement that are German.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I'd like to see some of
them. Yeah, I think it's just a wiener dog or something like that. With something saying.
I think there's one with
sausages.
Like horses.
Yeah, and the guy smoked. And he has cigar boxes and stuff like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of old trinkets.
In the 1800s, Germany was going through a tremendous upheaval. They had been a series of independent, it was really stateless. There was no state in Germany. Now, in France, there was a powerful state. In England, there was a powerful state. In the Netherlands, on and off, there was a powerful state. Sometimes it was controlled by Spain. There was a state in Austria, the Austrian government, and the state existed there.
Right.
But in most of Germany and in large portions of Poland and Eastern Europe, there was no state. There were little dukes and little, can't remember what they called those people, but they were landowners, and they would have people would work the land for them, and it was kind of like sharecropping, but they weren't subjects of a king, or they weren't subjects of an emperor or whatever. And so in the late 1800s, Bismarck basically was creating a state out of all this free Germany. And a lot of people didn't like that because the difference between living in a place with no state, where you don't have any taxes at all, and you come and go as you please, and if you want to live over there, you just go over there, and if you want to come over here and live over here, you just come over here. Going from that to a state that Bismarck was putting together, where all of a sudden you have military conscription, you have taxes, you have regulations, you have to answer to the government for everything you do. And these German people didn't like that so much, you know. So we had waves of immigrants, and these were all, generally speaking, they were highly skilled people. They were not the poor immigrants that were scratching in the dirt. Mm-hmm. They were professionals that had skills, and they went, you know, we're not going to tolerate this nonsense.
I wish I remember what they did.
The
Germans that lived there,
I know that the father was really like, he was a handyman. And
yeah.
He always kept the house up today and everything like that.
He left some of the schools too.
Yeah.
Built the bathroom, and he was the one that built everything.
Oh yeah.
Now,
everything.
Like right down at the end of your street, and then just a few blocks more is the old, almost abandoned bicycle factory.
Right.
I can't remember which manufacturer that was.
I think it's Schwinn.
Schwinn?
Yeah.
Huh. That sounds like a German name.
You know, we have a couple of Schwinns in our front yard. But they're made in Japan.
Now they are, yeah.
But they were from like the 70s. We got a hold of them from some lady in Oakwood.
That was a have you ever seen the Schwinn factory down there?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Schwinn.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, it's almost as, it's square. But it's all closed in,
yeah,
and you have to drive. You have to drive through the entrance to get into the middle of it, and that's where all the truck unloading and everything was.
Mm-hmm.
And the building itself is just massive. You can go around in there, and different bands have moved into there and taken over, made sound studios in there.
Mm-hmm.
Grenades, our musical intro and exit music, that has a studio in there.
Mm-hmm.
You guys probably know Grenades.
Yeah.
Everybody in Dayton area should know about Grenades.
Yeah.
We'll give Grenades a little commercial here. If you're in Dayton area, go down to Blind Bob's and listen to Grenades. You'll thank me for it, trust me. All right, so let's get to more the point of what we wanted to talk about was what's life like trying as young people trying to get out there and make a career and get a job and get an education, and what are people like who are your age? Are they saying like, hooray, our government's doing such a good job. We so much love what is happening with the economy.
Besides the ignorant people. The ones who are actually in the know. Are frustrated. As long as their parents aren't paying their entire way through college, generally.
Which most of them are.
Which most of us, a lot of our friends are, and most of the people are.
Most of the people in college, their parents pay for college for them, and their parents pay their way through college, and all they have to do is college. They don't have to work at all.
They don't understand what's really going on. They don't understand where that money comes from, where that money goes to. They don't understand even the amounts necessary for such things. I mean, UD is really expensive. It's more expensive than Harvard is, and yet these people just...
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the tuition there is more expensive than Harvard. And they're going there.
Well, Harvard, as odd as this may seem, Harvard doesn't have to charge as much because they have these huge endowments from other rich people who have already, you know, that put, like, massive amounts of money to Harvard, so they can afford to do that.
They can
actually afford to give out a lot of free education to people that they choose, who are, you know, what you might call legacies or whatever.
Scholarships, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because
people
they have
deserve the money.
Yeah. Because they have so many of these endowments that have been given to them over the years.
Right.
And UD doesn't have that.
Mm-mm. It's a private school, too.
Yeah, they want you to actually pay for what you're getting.
Yeah, not to mention the NCR buildings that they just bought.
Mm, yeah. Well, did they? They bought the old...
Yeah, NCR. They bought two buildings, I think. I think they demolished one or planning to, but the other one's going to be a med student building.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you were talking about kids that basically have the free, you know, everything's given to them by their parents, the whole free ride. Politically speaking, what direction do they tend to lean?
Oh, they're liberals.
Democrats.
Yeah.
I guess the new sense of liberals, the whole 90s sense, they're very democratic.
Mm-hmm.
They're socialist almost.
Now, how do these people, I say it like I'm talking down on them, how do they justify the continual warmongering of the Democratic Party? The traditional position of the Democratic Party going back like to the 60s was of peace.
Right.
And yet the warmongering that's going on right now is actually an escalation of the last warmongering that went on under the Republicans who were warmongers.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, I mean, they're not informed as to what's going on in Afghanistan and Libya and Syria, any of that, but I mean,
mostly they know the problems, but they just think there are no solutions.
And they think that the solutions that they have just don't create more problems.
They think that the government just has the solutions. And
right. They're like their
parents
who have
figure
the
answers out.
And the money.
Government will figure it out.
Yeah.
So what kind of job market is there in generally in the Dayton area? Is it really pretty depressed?
I'd say it's pretty stale.
Yeah.
I have had really good luck with jobs, but I always have. I got my first job at Cold Stone in Springboro, my second job at DLM right next door. And then I recently got a job at Panera, and they were just the first applicants that I put in. Mm-hmm. But everyone else that I've spoken to has had a lot more issues. Mm-hmm. She's trying to get a job now, another one, and she's put in maybe 20, maybe 30 applications easily. Probably 20 applications.
I know a big new Kohl's opened up down here, and they were just flooded with applicants.
I bet.
But now, you know, a lot of those applicants, I would say probably the majority of those applicants, are not there really looking for a job.
Yeah, I think they're housewives that need something to do.
Well, or they're unemployed, they're professionally unemployed.
Right.
And they're just getting their ticket stamped so that they can continue to be professionally unemployed.
Right.
Because there's, this net under everybody. If you've already worked and you've already built up a certain amount of unemployment, mm-hmm. and then you get fired or laid off or whatever,
right.
then you can play the system for a really long time before you absolutely have to do something else.
Yeah.
So a lot of those are doing that. But a lot of people will put in those applications, and then if they get the job, that's great. That just, if it goes 6 months or if it goes a year or whatever, then that extends them for the next time that mm-hmm. they can do that. So they can kind of afford to play that system like that. But for long-term jobs in the Dayton area, we're seeing the big employers just evaporate.
Gone. NCR says, we're not going to leave you. We'll take the bailout money from the state. And then they go to Seattle? Well,
yeah.
That's not Ohio.
Yeah. Or the way, GM has just shriveled up and almost disappeared out
GM's
of the area.
GM's gone. I mean, GM's in Mexico and Canada by now. I mean, they say they're...
China. They're opening
and
big
Turkey
stuff
too.
Oh, yeah.
But they say that they're all about Detroit, American muscle.
Yeah,
American muscle made everywhere else.
Have you driven by the old GM truck plant?
I try not to. I know it's toxic.
it's depressing driving.
Yeah, it is. It's
there's like
depressing.
Grass growing up in the middle of the parking lot and trees.
And not
to
mention just the whole effect of the slum for the neighborhood.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's worse, I think.
Just a huge rail yard just sitting there.
Yeah, it's like the fallout of the GM plant leaving.
Yeah. Well, it kind of does. You just mentioned fallout. It kind of looks like the result of a nearby nuclear.
Yeah, it does.
Like a not necessarily a nuclear bomb, but like a nuclear power plant. The whole place had to be evacuated.
Yeah, and everybody's just left it abandoned, pretty much. I mean, there's restaurants. And all kinds of things right across the street.
Yeah.
That are just boarded
dead
up.
Dead hotels.
Completely gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got weeds 4 feet high in the parking lots.
Strange looking.
Yeah, it is weird. It's surreal.
And just a few years ago, that was all vibrant and active.
Right.
And,
Well, there's rumors that it's going to be a Lockheed Martin plant now or something to do with aviation.
Yeah.
But.
Well, we'll probably have to get in a couple more wars to support something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
the
sure
war in Eurasia is going well, I've heard.
Huh?
For the war in Eurasia. Or,
oh.
Oceania.
Oh, that's a 1984 reference. We'll find some other really super weak country and go punch them repeatedly.
Well, I've heard North Korea is the next one they're chopping on.
They're pretty broke. We've been punching at North Korea for a long time. They can't feed their own. They can't feed their own army.
Yeah.
We've kept them isolated for.
Well, we keep the North Koreans alive.
Yeah.
Not just us, but other.
We punch them and kick them, and then we hand them some money, and then we punch them and kick them some more, and hand them some money.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we can use the fear mongering, we can keep them as a threat. Even though they can't feed themselves and they can't, they develop some kind of a nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
But yet, when we graded the how big the explosion was.
Mm-hmm.
You do that by seismic readings.
Right.
It was about the size of the detonator of an atomic bomb. So, it's likely that their atomic testing
Didn't work.
Didn't work, and it was only the detonator that we and they came out and said, "Hey, it works great." You
Not
know,
to mention they don't even have an effective delivery system.
They have they have no delivery system that could get the thing out to subs? Anywhere where it's going.
Subs of aircraft? No. ICBMs? No. We've got color television sometimes.
For the rich people.
For the rich people.
With one channel.
Yeah, with one channel. Yeah. And that's only
and,
like...
And it has Kim Jong-il programming.
Right, like, and not to mention the power outages that just happen occasionally.
Every day,
yeah, without warning. And
have you seen the Google, I don't think it's Google, but there's a satellite picture of the Earth with where all the lights are at night, mm-hmm. so you can see where all the population
all
centers.
Dark in North Korea.
Yeah, North Korea is basically black because they don't have electricity.
It's like parts of Africa.
Yeah. And we're supposed
there's
to be afraid
there.
Of them. Yeah, there's millions and millions of people there, and they're living like practically in the Stone Age.
They are. I don't get it, though, because they have multi-story buildings. I don't know where they came from.
Yeah.
Because it's not like they're building them now.
Yeah.
It's not like they're doing anything now. It's
well, they used to get a lot of support from China, and they used to get a lot of support from
the
Soviet
Union. Well, that's
the
whole reason why we got the parallel issue that we do now, is because they have China on their back.
We were going to talk about the ridiculous marijuana laws, but we almost run ourselves out of time.
That's enough for a new topic.
Going back to, real quick, we'll just touch on it for a second. Going back to the general feeling of people, you know, of the young people, we're talking the, say, under 25 age group, college and under 25 non-college in that group of people. Do you think they fully understand the devastation that the drug war is doing to our economy and to our nation and to the world in general, or do they just see it as an inconvenience?
That's a good question.
Most of them understand that we shouldn't
that they
should legalize marijuana and stuff like that, but they're still like, oh, but all the other drugs still
right.
have to be.
Yeah, they're still on the fence about things like acid or meth or heroin, that whether those should be legal. And of course they should, because of the regulation that comes in it and the fact that you'd be taking away the money from drug lords and the people who have to break the laws, who have the guns, who cannot settle things through the normal judiciary system.
By making it illegal, you deregulate it and make a black market.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you shoot the price up tenfold.
Right.
It would make it so much more accessible to whoever actually needs it. Because the people who are going to use heroin now are the people who are going to use heroin when it's legal. It's not going to change much. There's not going to be crossover. It's illegal now, but I wouldn't do it.
Right.
You know, it still doesn't change that, whether the government says this or that. Mm-hmm. I don't drink caffeine. That I don't smoke cigarettes. I mean, there's lots of things that I don't do, but... Mm-hmm.
And the government regulation one way or the other wouldn't change that.
Doesn't change anything. It's knowledge.
All it does is create the black market, create a funding source for crime, and create a situation where you guarantee that violence and an unstable product are the result, rather than...
Exactly.
You know, I don't ever recall Bacardi having a turf war with Crown Royal.
I don't
recall that happening.
Coors and Miller kind of have that, but that's just lobbyists.
Yeah.
they've been keeping marijuana illegal for as long as they have been around. They don't want marijuana legal at all,
right.
because it cuts
there's
into
big
the market
money.
Share. Yeah, there's big money. And in fact, beer's been going down with the latest generation and the past 5 years, beer has just tanked. Yeah.
And they're getting desperate to try to...
And, of course, the national beers have really tanked, but the artisan
private,
ones, private beers, small breweries, they're really skyrocketing.
Yeah.
And that's where I think that any sort of drug would go. Mm-hmm. It'd be going to local people, I think.
Yeah. Well, if you think about what happened with the example of meth, in the late 70s, early 80s, meth was widely available, and almost nobody wanted it, because it's nasty,
right.
and it's dangerous.
And it was over-the-counter in the 30s and 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the 80s, there was this big crackdown on Coke,
Yeah.
And but everybody pretty much ignored
that. But then there was the boom of crack.
And that caused the boom, yeah. And so then there was a crackdown on crack.
Yeah, and the presidents basically sold that war. They, like, yeah, they yeah. had bags of this stuff saying, this is crack cocaine.
It's $5.
It's just $5. Uh-huh. And everyone in the ghetto would sell their grandmother for one more hit of crack cocaine.
So then they escalated the war on that.
Because they have to spend money on that.
And it drove... It drove the hardcore addicts away from cocaine and away from even crack cocaine and towards meth.
And towards a new subculture.
Yeah. And then in the early 90s, in the, you know, through almost all the 90s, as meth gained popularity because of how they were cracking down on cocaine, people were producing meth as a mom-and-pop operation, mm-hmm. you know. And it was very localized. The gangs didn't have a lot of influence on it. It was mm-hmm. all just private individual groups selling it and making it. Mm-hmm. And so then the government decided to crack down on the mom-and-pop meth operations.
Right.
Well, you couldn't have done a better deed to help the drug cartels
yeah.
than to crack down on the mom-and-pop.
Because now instead of all the money being pumped right back into the local economy, it gets shipped to Mexico yeah. or Afghanistan.
Yeah, and where... CIA, where huge industrial-like production of meth is taking place, and these guys are making literally billions of dollars, mm-hmm. and they're almost owning small countries in Central America.
Exactly, and these guys are the ones that have the gold-plated AK-47, yeah. the diamond-studded mm-hmm. bazookas. I mean, no way that the law enforcement could fight against those people. They yep. they are way outgunned.
Okay, well, I think we pretty much covered everything. I know you guys are on a schedule. You need to get going. So I appreciate you coming on the show with me today. It's kind of a short podcast today, but that's because we're under time constraints. And you guys have a busy, hectic schedule out there fighting crime and saving Dayton from it, from itself. So thanks for coming on the show, and everybody be sure and check with badquaker.com. Email me, ben@badquaker.com, and here comes the exit music. You guys hear it? Do you hear the exit music?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Liars. Bye, folks.